Be fair, Hiram, the Commodore reminded himself for perhaps the thousandth time. Unlike you, Abbott has no connections at all, and the man's already, what, 43? Whatever. Old enough, at any rate, to expect he's not going to climb much higher without someone to give him a boost. Although I'd think the fact that they picked him to command one of the very first galleons ought to go at least a little way towards reassuring him. On the other hand, the Navy had never been exactly glamorous in Desnarian eyes. Quite a few of the career naval officers Wallaire had met over the last several months seemed to find it a bit difficult to grasp just how much that was about to change. "All right, Rousseau," he said out loud after several seconds' thought. "What do you recommend?"
"Recommend, sir?"
Abbott's eyes flitted sideways for a moment towards Larrey's.
"Do we let him catch us, or do we make more sail of our own?"
Wellar expanded in a slightly dangerous tone. Abbott's eyes came back to the Commodore's face, and Wellar managed not to sigh in exasperation. As far as he could tell, there was nothing at all wrong with Abbott's physical courage, but it was obvious he had no more intention of putting his foot wrong in front of Larrey's than he did of offending Wellar himself. Which Wellar was forced to concede upon more mature consideration was probably wise of him in many ways after all. Larrey's hadn't been the Commodore's own choice as chaplain. He'd been assigned to Wellar by Bishop Executor Martin Raislair, and his presence was a clear statement of exactly who Archangel Chihiro actually belonged to. She might fly Desnare's black horse on a yellow field, but there was a reason Mother Church's pennant flew above the national colors. For the moment, no one was talking a great deal about that reason, not openly at any rate, but only a complete moron, which, despite his obsequiousness, Abbott clearly wasn't, could have failed to realize that all the rumors about the imminence of holy war had a very sound basis indeed. It was fortunate, in Wellar's opinion, that there seemed to be little of the fanatic about Father Aubrey. Zealotry, yes, which was only to be expected in the priest the bishop executor had chosen as his personal eyes and ears on Wellar's staff, but not fanaticism. He was unlikely to hold Abbott's honest opinion against the flag captain, whatever it was, but Wellar supposed he shouldn't really blame Abbott for being cautious in front of him.
"I suppose, sir, that that depends on what it is we want to accomplish," the flag captain said finally. "If our sole concern is to collect the bullion from Kerman Keep, then I would advise against accepting action."
His eyes tried to flick to Larrey's again, but he kept his voice commendably firm as he continued. "While there are two of us and only one of him, it's entirely possible, even probable, that we'd suffer at least some damage even against one of their privateers. If this is one of their war galleons, the chance of that goes up considerably, and any damage we might suffer would have to be put right again before we could sail with the bullion, which would undoubtedly delay its delivery."
A reasonable answer, Wellar reflected, and a well-taken point, for that matter.
He didn't know the precise value of the gold shipment awaiting his two ships, but he knew it was large. In fact, it was a substantial portion of Desnare's annual tithe to Mother Church, actually, which, considering the incredible outlays the temple had been making to pay for the new warships building all over Howard and Haven, lent a certain urgency to getting that gold safely delivered to the temple's coffers in Zion. Vicar Robert's treasury needed all the cash it could get, and given typical winter road conditions, it made sense to send it by sea for as much of its journey as possible. Or it would have, at least, if not for the omnipresent Carisian privateers, and if the ships building in the Gulf of Jarus, conveniently close to Kerman Keep, had been near enough to ready for sea to take it. As it happened, however, those Carisian privateers did indeed seem to be just about everywhere, and none of the new construction at Ithria or Marossa had been far enough advanced for the task. which explained why he and the first two fully operational ships of his squadron had been dispatched all the way from the imperial capital at Desnair the City, so called to distinguish it from the rest of the empire, to fetch it.
"We're already behind schedule, too, and Bishop Executor Martin won't thank me if I'm even later," he thought. "There are two of us, though, and sooner or later we have to cross swords with them. Langhorne knows the sheer terror of the Carizians' reputation is one of their most effective weapons. Deservedly so, I suppose. But they're only mortals, when all said, and we need to start chipping away at that reputation."
He glanced at his chaplain.
"Father, I'm inclined to let this fine gentleman overhaul us, if that's his intention, or to let him get at least a bit closer at any rate, close enough for us to see who he really is. If he's only a privateer, I imagine he'll sheer off once he realizes he's been chasing a pair of war galleons, and to be honest, I'd like to get him close enough we'd have a chance to catch him if he runs."
"And if he's a war galleon himself, Commodore?"
Larray's deep voice sounded even deeper, coming from someone as youthful-looking as the underpriest, and the brown cockade of his priest's cap fluttered in the stiff breeze, whipping across Archangel Chihiro's quarterdeck.
"If he's a war galleon, then I suppose it's possible he'll keep right on coming," Wellar replied. "If he does, as the captain's just pointed out, there are two of us, which should give us a considerable advantage if we can entice him into engagement range. Do you think His Eminence would be willing to put up with a little delay while we repair any battle damage in return for taking or sinking one of Caleb's warships?"